You're listening to Avasant on the Record, a podcast discussing key trends and insights into government-driven markets.
With Avasant's On the Record podcast, I'm August Cole, writer in residence. The hunger for innovation is real in the private and public sectors, but doing so consistently and collectively is an enormous challenge, particularly in large organizations. Enter design thinking. To explore what design thinking is and its relevance for the government and defense sectors, we're joined by Caitlin Tabor, an associate at Avasant, and Josh Pavlik, a principal at Avasant. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
As someone who's seen the blizzards of post-its from a design thinking exercise, I have a pretty good sense of, I think, what it is. But step back and explain what you define it as.
Well, I'll start off with the textbook definition, and then I'll go to what I see as the real definition of design thinking. If you look at a textbook, or if you even look at the standard for design thinking, the ISO standard that's out there, it really boils down to this. Design thinking is designing solutions in the service of people. Now, that definition in and of itself can often be very unsatisfying. It doesn't really give you a full flavor for what design thinking is. So let me step back a little bit and talk about what I see design thinking to be here. So what design thinking is in practice, it's a structured brainstorming process that gets to solutions. And the way that you get to solutions is by first looking at the problem. So oftentimes it's very tempting to look at what technology is great or go right to a solution that could be attractive. Design thinking flips that on its head and says, let's start with the problem. And that's really the defining characteristic of design thinking. There are also some other characteristics that I think are really important here that really make this more tangible. So the first thing that really stands out about design thinking to me is that it's a very collaborative process. It's very iterative. Design thinking is not linear. It's something that is a repeatable process, and really it's a mindset, it's a way of thinking. It's also a process that requires empathy, to really put yourself in the position of people and think about what solutions do people want, and start with the problem that people have. So there's a number of different characteristics that can help you kind of wrap your head around design thinking, but to look for a definition in and of itself, it can admittedly be a challenging process. It's something that I think you just have to go through and experience to really see what it's all about.
Caitlin, do you see this as being about process, or is it more about outcomes?
I think probably the best way I would describe it is that it's sort of building outcomes into the process. So Josh mentioned that design thinking isn't a linear process, and that's completely true. In fact, in design thinking, you're often approaching the problem in different phases. The end of each phase, the observation phase, the definition phase, gets you a little bit closer to framing that problem such that you're creating that ultimate solution. So I view it as you're able to have a bunch of different outcomes throughout the process versus a traditional process that would just have a beginning and an end.
Josh, you've had some experience working on these kinds of activities. What are some of your favorites?
Well, one of my favorites is an activity that is really admittedly design thinking 101, but it's a classic activity that really is a foundation for many others. And this may be familiar to anyone who's in the Boy Scouts. It's an activity called Rosebud Thorn. And so what it is, very simply, is you start with a problem or you start with a situation, and then you assign roses, buds, and thorns. And the rose is what is a positive aspect of that situation or that problem set. A thorn is what is a negative aspect of that. And then a bud is what is an opportunity or what could be a positive, but we don't quite know yet. So you go around, assign rose, bud, thorn. And then as people start to assign more and more of these roses and buds and thorns, which really manifest themselves in the form of sticky notes, as with many things in design thinking, you then start to see patterns and you start to see larger clusters of ideas. And then the key is to build from the rosebud thorn into these broader ideas, these broader clusters, which then serves as a foundation for many more activities that you can do as part of a design thinking exercise.
I think my favorite, and it's one of the first design thinking methods that I heard of was five whys, which is basically you take an observation or a statement you believe to be true, and you just ask yourself why. And then once you get the answer to that, you ask why again, and it helps you get to the core truth of the statement itself.
You've worked on this with clients. Walk us through an example of how this has been helpful.
So something that actually Josh and I worked on together was we had a client who wanted to stand up a new group within its organization, and we were able to spend a half day with them using different design thinking methods to develop not only the structure of this group, but walk through the governance, who are the stakeholders, how are they going to interact with this group, and what some of the challenges were. And I think it was a great opportunity for us to not just generate buy-in from the group that was there, but get their feedback while we were actually designing the group itself.
One of the aspects of that situation that I really was impressed by was just how quickly people took to design thinking. So many people in the room had no previous experience. Some of them have heard of design thinking, had seen post-it notes before, but didn't quite know what it was really all about. But once people got into the activities, I thought there was just a lot of enthusiasm, and people really took ownership over the process. And it was really good to see that, you know, there was a lot of enthusiasm the more and more people got into it.
Take that a step further and talk about what it's like to be in the room, you know, for those who are listening and haven't actually had hands-on. What can they expect to see around a given table? What can they expect to see on the wall?
You can expect to see lots of post-it notes and sticky notes. 3M, I'm sure, is very happy about the design thinking movement. So that's a core hallmark of any sort of design thinking exercise.
Multicolored,
right. And why is that? Why do sticky notes matter? Well, part of it is because they're small. And so it forces you to write ideas in a small space. And so in many ways, it's kind of like Twitter. You have to really condense your ideas into a thought that is really powerful. But on the other hand, what can you do with a sticky note if you don't like your thought? You can crumple it up and you can throw it away. And so that's another benefit of sticky notes. So a really great way to condense thoughts and then get rid of them if you want. You also have a lot of Sharpies as part of design thinking. Why do Sharpies matter? Well, first off, so other people can see your thoughts. And again, this is a collaborative process. The other reason Sharpies matter is because it's, again, very hard to write a lot in a small space with a Sharpie, so it really forces you to boil down your thoughts.
One of the other aspects, and I don't know if you've seen this, but the Post-it allows you to have a very horizontal approach to the value of a given idea. Everybody's mm-hmm. piece of paper is the same size, whether mm-hmm. you're a CEO mm-hmm. or a frontline employee. It's quite effective.
And it doesn't have your name on it either.
Correct.
So as soon as it goes up, it becomes part of the overall group's process of solving the challenge at hand.
And that's a really important point, is with design thinking, the loudest voice in the room does not win. The best ideas win. And for an organization that's really looking for innovation, for an organization that's looking to move more quickly, cut through bureaucracy, cut through red tape, design thinking is just a great way to do that.
So a company, though, might say, how does it save me money? Or how does it grow my top line? What's the answer?
Well, the answer is that design thinking will help your organization move in a way that's more agile. So instead of relying on a one-year or five-year planning process, design thinking expedites the planning process. So if for a company that's looking to be more efficient, save, and really move more quickly, design thinking allows you to do that and really make sure that the best ideas boil to the top or move to the top more quickly than they would have otherwise. It's also a great way to design products. So for an organization that's looking to grapple with, say, a topic like artificial intelligence or autonomy or blockchain, technologies where it's very difficult to envision the future, design thinking is a way to help crystallize what a company's product or offering will look like much more quickly than they otherwise would have.
Think about the challenge of envisioning, for example, what personal pilotless aircraft could look like. This seems like the sort of exercise on the civilian side that could do that. And then on the defense side, you have already a lot of very intimate customer knowledge among contractors. But the ability to see things wholly new can be challenged by tradition, by that same familiarity.
Exactly. And so with design thinking, what it allows you to do is just start from a clean slate, essentially, and really reimagine what the future is going to look like. And do that in a way that harnesses ideas from everybody in the group. So it's not just one person's vision of the future. It's one person's vision of the future that is then built on by another person's vision of the future that is then iterated. So it's a group effort that really allows you to think about things in a way that really takes into account the best ideas of everybody in the room.
Is design thinking a discrete application, or is it something that has an almost universal role to play in an organization?
I would say definitely the latter. We've talked about design thinking being a mindset, and I've personally found that to be true. I've used it to tackle really, really big complex problems where we had no idea how we were even going to define the problem at the beginning. And I've used it on more discrete applications. I've even used it with my boyfriend to talk about stuff that we need to get rid of and buy around the house. So I think it's really less of is it useful and more how can you bring design thinking in for that specific application.
I agree. There's really no limit on the number of applications for design thinking. I'd say the biggest limit is a person's willingness and openness to use the methodology or to accept the mindset. And so if there's a challenge, that's really what it is. But what I've seen is that even people who are skeptics, you know, once you get them in the room, more times than not, once they see the process and see the mindset in action, you have a lot of converts from people who are skeptics.
But you are talking about breaking with tradition or breaking a mold that may have been very effective over time in a given organization to plan for the future or design a product. How do you help kind of crack that resistance to doing things in a new way?
Well, I would see design thinking as complementary to processes that are already in place. So for example, strategic planning processes are in no way, I would say, not compatible with a design thinking exercise. In fact, you could use design thinking as part of a strategic planning process. So I think that's one of the myths that is out there, is that design thinking is, you know, perhaps something different or something that stands on its own, but in reality it's something that can be integrated with existing processes. And I think that's one of the ways that you get people bought in, is by showing people that it's in fact complementary to things that are already taking place.
I would say, at least internally, whenever I'm introducing it to a group for the first time, I'll give people the option. You know, at the end of this, if you've tried it and you'd like to go back to how we used to do it, which is just talking about the issue, we can always do that. And I have yet to have somebody say, let's go back to the old way, too.
It seems like design thinking can be used to consider a lot of the really existential questions that are in the national security community right now, from the rise of unmanned aircraft to robotics and warfare, to civilian technologies like quantum computing and machine learning. So how would you use it to tackle some of these keep you up at night questions within the defense industry?
Well, I'd say design thinking is actually perfect for these sorts of problems. And the reason for that is because design thinking is a way to envision the future in a way that doesn't get you lost in the tech. So you can put the problem first, put the human first, figure out what the solution is that benefits the human or the operator in this case, and do it in a way that's creative and doesn't get you trapped in old ways of thinking or old ways of doing things. So for these types of issues that are keeping people up at night, whether they're technological, whether they're policy, whether they're about threats, design thinking is perfect for solving these sorts of problems.
Well, Caitlin and Josh, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With Avasense on the Record podcast, I'm August Cole.
You've been listening to Avasense on the Record. To learn more about Avasense, go to avasense.com or follow us on Twitter @Avasense.